kshatar yanmam tvam paripristavan prachetasang naradasya sangvadam harikirtanam etate bhitam kshatar yanmam tvam paripristavan prachetasang naradasya sangvadam harikirtanam etat this te unto you abhihitam instructed kshataha o vidura yat whatever mam unto me tvam you paripristavan inquired prachetasam of the prachetas naradasya of Narada sangvadam conversation harikirtanam describing the glories of the Lord. Translation: my dear Vidura, I have told you everything you wanted to know about the conversation between Narada and the Prachetas, the conversation describing the glories of the Lord. I have related this as far as possible. Purport: Srimad Bhagavatam describes the glories of the Lord and his devotees. Because the whole subject matter is the glorification of the Lord, naturally the glorification of his devotees automatically follows. Om Agyanatimirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshunmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So this purport is like a sutra that calls out for us to revisit the glories of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Bhagavatam describes the Lord and his devotees. It's quite interesting. I noticed some time ago that usually whenever you have any Purana, each Purana describes 10 topics. So Bhagavatam is a little bit different than the other Puranas. Bhagavatam also gives its list of 10 topics at the in the first canto. Atrasaga, Visagastra, etc. And at the end of the 12th canto, it gives the general list of 10 topics for any given Purana. And so what's different between the Bhagavatam and a general Purana is the general Purana has Vamsha, Vamshanucharitam. A general Purana describes the dynasties of kings and the activities performed by the kings in those dynasties. And those activities may or may not be overwhelmingly transcendental. They may be great in a material sense. This king conquered so many things and he managed things very wonderfully and the citizens really thrived under his rule. But what Bhagavatam does is it replaces those two items, Vamsha and Vamshanucharita, the dynasty of kings and the activities of those kings, with the two items, Ishanukata and Mukti. So Ishanukata, Bhagavatam describes in its own words, Ishanukata is topics describing Krishna and Anu. Also, Anu stands for the word Anuvartinam there. So his followers, his devotees. So any topics describing Krishna and his devotees, that'll be the way that we judge whether something makes it into the Bhagavatam or not. On one level, Bhagavatam does follow the genealogical structure of other Puranas. Specifically, it deals with the line from Swayambhuva Manu, we're just hearing that now, Dhruva Uttanapada, down to the purchases and so on. And it also talks about the solar dynasty in which Ramachandra appeared and all the kings in that dynasty, and the lunar dynasty in which Krishna appeared. So it does follow the dynasty of kings and down from Swayambhuva Manu and so on. But it skips over several generations. You'll notice sometimes the Bhagavatam goes into fast forward, you know. It wants to just stop at points where there's significant devotees in those dynasties. So now the focus is not the kings in those dynasties necessarily, but the devotees that have appeared in these lines. So there's a lot of time spent on great devotees like Dhruva, Prahlad, and other great kings. And there's also some counterexamples. You know, Prithu came in that line, but before him is Vena. So as a counterexample. So the same structure is used, but the focus is on speaking about Krishna and his devotees. So Bhagavatam only stops at those points and goes into detail. Otherwise, it's just name after name after name until you get to the next significant devotee. So both the speaker of the Srimad Bhagavatam and the original hearer and the later wider audience are all very much on the same page with this program. Krishna protected both the original speaker and the original hearer of the Bhagavatam. Shukadev Goswami's names and Parikshit Maharaj's names are Brahmarata and Vishnurata, respectively, right? Brahmarata. Shukadev Goswami, he was inside his mother's womb for 12 years. He didn't want to come out. He was afraid of getting taken over by Maya. And it's explained, Prabhupada explains in one of his purports from the Brahma Vaivarta Purana. He cites a passage that Krishna himself had to come all the way to Vyasadeva's ashram up in the Himalayas and coax Shukadev Goswami out of the womb and assured him of his protection. And he also, at that time, you know, Shukadev Goswami got an experience of Krishna, and he later heard much about Krishna from his father. So even though he was already liberated from birth, actually, he was already a sage from birth, he didn't actually undergo the formal training that others do. But he was immediately attracted by the qualities of Krishna. Hare guna kshipta mati. His mind was agitated. He couldn't remain on that neutral Brahmavad platform anymore. He became forcibly attracted to Krishna. And we know Parikshit Maharaj is called Vishnurata because he was protected by Krishna when Ashwatthama threw the Brahmastra to end the last of the dynasty. He'd already killed the other sons of the Pandavas in their sleep in a very heinous way, and he wanted to finish off the job. So he sent the Brahmastra, and you know, Uttara was praying that let it burn me to ashes, but please do not let it burn this last heir to the dynasty. And Krishna came and protected Maharaj Parikshit in the womb, and we know that he got the name Parikshit because he was always looking after that. Where is this Lord who came and protected me? I want to see him again. So both the speaker and the original hearer have a very unique position, and also the sages headed by Shonaka, who are the later audience, they are also very particular about hearing only Krishna Katha. And there's at least two instances that pop to mind in this regard, where they actually steer the topic back towards Krishna. The audience is that conscientious that, you know, because usually in a Purana there's some talk of, you know, this kalpa or that kalpa or this history or that history. You can easily digress in Puranas, but they keep it very much on track. And an example of that is Sutta Goswami started narrating about the sages, Maharaj Parikshit, and how Kali had come there and Maharaj Parikshit was able to personally encounter the personality of Kali, and he punished him. And so the sages wanted to know, why did Maharaj Pariksit simply punish Kali? Why didn't he just outright kill him and get rid of the problem? It's a very valuable question. But then they also qualified that question by saying, Tat katyatam mahabhaga yadi krishna katashraya atava tat padam bhoja makaranda liham satam. That please tell us about this only if it has some basis in Krishna katha, or if it has some basis on narration about Krishna's devotees. So they wanted to know, but if it was going to go in that direction. Another example is Suta Goswami was about to switch topics and start talking about the Padmakalpa, I believe somewhere in the third canto. And the sages, headed by Shvanaka, actually stopped him and said, please, actually, we want to hear about Vidura. We want to hear about the great Saint Vidura and he left home and he was able to meet Uddhava. We've heard about this and Maitreya. So please tell us about that instead. So they were more eager to hear about, you know, they had heard other Puranas in that Satra Yajna, the 1,000-year Yajna that they were sitting down to perform for the upliftment of, to somewhat keep at bay some of the darkness of Kali Yuga. They were hearing many Puranas, not just Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam was perhaps one of the last and the climax of what they heard. But they were not interested in hearing the usual structure. Okay, this Kalpa, this dynasty. They wanted to hear about Vidura. So the audience, the speaker, and the original hearer, they're all on a very special level in Srimad Bhagavatam. And the Bhagavatam itself talks about its own special special features that make it different than all other Puranas in the beginning and at the end. The first, the second and third verses of the Srimad Bhagavatam, the Bhagavatam talks about itself, and also at the end, when Bhagavatam concludes by saying, Vaishnavanam yata shambhu, Purananam idam tata, right? That among, well, it goes on to say that among all the rivers, Ganga is the best, and among all the devas, Achyuta is the best. Among all the Vaishnavas, Shambhu is the best, and among all the Puranas, Srimad Bhagavatam is the king, it's the best. It's the Granta Raja. So, it also at the end talks about some of the special features of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam Puranam Amalam Yad Vaishnavanam Priyam Yasmin Paramahamsyam Ekam Amalam Gyanam Param Giyate Tatra jnana viraga bhakti sahitam naishkamyam apishkritam tatshrinvan supatan vicharana paro bhaktyad virmuchenara. The followers of Prabhupada give a nice translation that this is one of the key verses that describes the Bhagavat Mahatmya, the glories or the greatness of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam is the spotless Purana. It is most dear to the Vaishnavas because it describes the pure and supreme knowledge of the Paramahamsas. This Bhagavatam reveals the means for becoming free from all material work, together with the process of transcendental knowledge, renunciation, and devotion. Anyone who seriously tries to understand Srimad Bhagavatam, who properly hears and chants it with devotion, becomes completely liberated. That also, we talked about mukti being one of the 10 topics of the Bhagavatam, which is not one of the usual 10. So just reading Srimad Bhagavatam ensures liberation. It ensures even beyond liberation, prema. So it over-promises. So not over-promises, it over-delivers on its promise. So we see also the first main verses of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Dharma projita kaitavotra. Narada had chastised Narada Muni that Narada had chastised Vyasadeva, rather, sorry, that you're not feeling satisfaction because you haven't very directly described to people absolute truth and devotion to the absolute truth. You've encouraged them to follow their material proclivities in the name of Dharma, and this is jugupsitam. This is actually a very horrible thing that you've done. So then Vyasadeva, at the beginning of this book, he makes it very clear. We're not going to cheat you anymore. We're not going to beat around the bush. We're not going to put you on some other path. All the cheating religion has been removed from here. Here, you will be able to know, Vedyam, you will be able to know that Vastavam Vastu, that supreme, the actual truth. You will be able to, or sometimes Vastavam Vastu. Vastu means the absolute truth, Krishna, and Vastavam means the things which are connected to the absolute truth, like his devotees, his dham, his devotional service, his form and his pastimes, etc. Everything connected to him, Vastavam. Just like you have the word Vishnu and you have the word Vaishnava, somebody who's connected to Vishnu is a Vaishnava, so something that's connected to the Vastu is Vastavam. So you'll be able to know all of these things. In other scriptures, actually, you cannot know these things. They may be pointed at, but not much information is given about them. In the Upanishads, for etc., Brahma, the supreme Brahman, is talked about, and some adjectives are used there, some... You know, that it's Satchidananda, it's eternal, it's unlimited, and it's not material, it's beyond the modes, and etc. Some general description, but nothing very specific and nothing at all very personal. But the very direct and very intimate knowledge of the Lord, which cannot be found elsewhere, is given in the Srimad Bhagavatam. In fact, in the Tattva Sandarbha, Jiva Goswami spends a great deal of time building up that argument that how pramana, first, if you want to talk about the prameya, what you can know, what's the ultimate thing that we're trying to know is the absolute truth, and everything else will make sense in connection with him, because he's the origin. But how can you know him? What's the pramana? What's the proper means of knowing? So he establishes that the shabda pramana is the best out of all the different ways. But what is the best shabda pramana? He talks about the Vedas, the Upanishads, Itihasas, Puranas. So he talks about how the Itihasas and Puranas are the Panchama Veda, and they actually are better for the people in Kali Yuga. Sometimes the Vedas are put up on a very high pedestal and we don't really know what's in there, so we think they're very amazing and wonderful. But actually, comparatively, the Puranas are better for people in Kali Yuga because they very directly describe Krishna and his incarnations, his pastimes, his forms. And among the Puranas, Srimad Bhagavatam very directly describes only Krishna and doesn't let in any room for any other understanding that any other person may be the Supreme Lord. And it gives a very direct description of the Lord's form, mentions several of his intimate devotees, his amazing pastimes which attract even the Atmaramas. It's a very, especially if you compare it to world religions, it's a very unprecedented package. Nobody knows God's name, what he looks like. You know, they don't even conceive that he could have his own personal activities of enjoyment apart from catering to our demands, right? They think that's all, that there is the God. He's just some guy that's there to hear all our prayers and fulfill them. They don't have any conception that he has a lila. So this is described very elaborately in Srimad Bhagavatam. Jai Shri Shri Gornitai, Shri Shri Krishna Balaram, Shri Shri Radha Shama Sunda Ki Jai. And we see that the adhikaris, the suitable audience for the Srimad Bhagavatam, it also is of quite a high bar. Nimatsaranam satam. Not only is the audience of Srimad Bhagavatam expected to be satam, already to be saintly people, but then completely pure saintly people, nirmatsaranam, free from envy? That's a very high bar, actually. Also in the third verse, the adhikaris, the proper hearers of Srimad Bhagavatam, are described with the words muhuraho rasika bhuvi bhavuka, the rasikas and the bhavukas. That is who actually Shukadev Goswami is addressing in the beginning of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Oh, you knowers of rasa, oh, you devotees who are infused with bhava. It's again quite a a high bar for the hearers. But the thing is that Srimad Bhagavatam is so powerful that it can actually pick up anybody from any state and very quickly bring him to that stage just by hearing. Sadyo hrid yava rudyate drakritipi sushrushibis takshinat. Within a minute, within a second practically, if you submissively hear, then Ishvara sadyava rudyate, that the Lord will immediately be avarudyate, the word used is captured. He'll be captured in the heart. He'll be jailed in the heart. And we know Srinvatam Swakata Krishna Punya Shravana Kirtana. Right? Krishna being situated in the heart, he himself takes up the responsibility of clearing the heart of the hearer of this, of his own kata. So very quickly one can come to that very amazing position where the unlimited Supreme Lord is brought under the control of the limited aspiring devotee by the glorious process of bhakti. So Bhagavatam is very powerful in that sense. It's described as the ripened fruit of the Vedas. Krishna is described here and there throughout the Vedic literature. The Bhagavat Mahatmya of the Padma Purana gives a very interesting example that when you have milk, ghee is there throughout the milk, but you can't see it. It's only when you go through the right process of extraction that you come to appreciate ghee and you can see it for what it is, right? So Krishna is there throughout all the Puranas, throughout all the Vedic literatures, to greater or lesser degrees, but when he's talked about in Srimad Bhagavatam, it's saram saram samudritam. Just like when you take milk, every time you get a daily delivery of milk, say if you keep it in the fridge, then the cream floats to the top, and every day you collect that cream, and then you churn it, and you get ghee, right? So, saram saram samudritam. Bhagavatam is like that. Or the Bhagavat Mahatmya also gives another example that throughout the whole tree, the sweet rasa is moving through the different limbs of the tree, but only when it becomes concentrated in its fruit can you actually taste it. You'll taste the rasa when you bite into the fruit of the tree, but rasa may be pulsing through the limbs of the tree in other forms, but if you bite on the branch, it won't be concentrated enough that you'll get a taste of the mango or the apple or whatever. So Bhagavatam's the fruit. You can actually taste the rasa in this, and Shukadev Goswami encourages us as a pivata Bhagavatam rasam alayam, that taste this fruit until laya. Laya can mean either liberation, or Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains how it can mean fainting, actually. There's one of the Vyabhichari Bhavas is laya, to faint on the ground. So he says, drink this Bhagavatam until you faint. And then when you wake up from your faint, then drink some more, he says. So Bhagavatam is very, very amazing in this sense. And it's also described elsewhere as nanarta upabringhitam. It's brimming over with various meanings. every syllable practically has its own special meaning. We know that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave 64 possible explanations of the Atmarama verse. 64. And that various verses in the Srimad Bhagavatam, especially in the 10th canto, if you read the commentaries, there's a lot of interesting double meanings that are full of rasa. On one side, there's a lot of vyaja stuti, for example, when the Krishna leaves the rasa dance and the gopis go searching after him, and then they speak, later they, when he comes back, they speak to him, and so they're speaking sweet words on one level, but some kind of praise of him on one level, but on another level they're venting their anger that Krishna had left. And there's a very pleasant double meaning, a very pleasant expression of rasa in many places. Even when Uddhava's message is delivered to the gopis, it means, on one level, it just sounds like jnana, right? It's just a message that, you know, you should be detached, and you should, you know, understand things in this way. It's very philosophical, but by double meaning, it has a very deep personal meaning, an intimate message to the gopis. So that's also, of course, takes some churning and some hearing from the acharyas, but it's a very deep shastra. To give you an example, we can have a look at the first verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam. We also hear that Bhagavatam is the... it contains the Gayatri, the essence of the Gayatri, and it also is Sava Vedanta Saram Hi Srimad Bhagavatam Ishite. It's the essence of all Vedanta. So we hear these things all the time, right? It's the natural commentary on Vedanta. So the first verse demonstrates these three principles very wonderfully. How Srimad Bhagavatam is, in effect, a Gayatri. And how it's endowed with many meanings, and how it's the natural commentary to the Vedanta. Of course, there's like 15 minutes left to to do this. I can't exactly present to you everything about the first verse as an example, but I'll show some basic idea of how it's so. Vishwanath Chakravarti, for example, gives five interpretations, five different meanings for the first verse of Srimad Bhagavatam. And while doing that, he also explains how the Gayatri, the essence of the Gayatri, is contained in that verse, and how several sutras of the Vedanta Sutra are covered in that verse. So I'll start with the things that are quicker, and so that's the Gayatri. Srimad Bhagavatam, what is the word in the Srimad Bhagavatam's first verse that is the same as a Gayatri word? Dhimahi. Okay, that is very obvious, okay? So the Brahma Gayatri contains the word dhimahi, and it also contains the other key phrase, prachodayat, right? Dhyo yo nah prachodayat, that may... well, it depends how you interpret the Brahma Gayatri. One basic level is the sun, right? The sun inspire our intelligence. The sun, by its rising, inspires everybody to get up and to, you know, to work and to go about and to plan their day and so on, right? It gives life and inspires the intelligence, wakes up the intelligence of the living entity. So, of course, it also refers to Krishna, and it can also refer to Radha and Krishna. But the point of inspiring the intelligence, that is covered in the phrase Tene Brahma Hridaya Adi Kavaye, that Krishna, he inspired Brahma in the heart with the knowledge of the Vedas, and those Vedas later came out from him, came out from his mouth, and became known as the four Vedas that issued from the four mouths of Lord Brahma. And there's a famous verse in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Prachodita Yena Pura Sarasvati, prachodita. If you know, prachodayat is the verb, right? Dioyonaf prachodayat. So prachodita yena. So the idea of impelling the intelligence, you know, inspiring or enlightening, that is there in the phrase tene brahma hridayati kavye satyam param dhimahi. Knowing the absolute truth, you could say vedyam vastavamatra vastushivadam. Of course, vidmahe doesn't come in the Brahma Gayatri, it comes in other Gayatris, but that idea is also there. And various sutras of the Vedanta Sutra are also covered in the first verse of Srimad Bhagavatam. What's the very obvious one? Janmad yasya yataha, quoted verbatim. It's a direct sutra in the verse. But several other sutras are alluded to in the discussion. First of all, the first sutra, Tato Brahma Jigyasa. Now, therefore, we should inquire into the absolute truth. That is there in the form of its effect. When you inquire about the absolute truth, then you get an answer. And the answer will describe something about the absolute truth, and then you're supposed to meditate on what you've heard, right? So the idea of meditating on the absolute truth, satyam param dhimahi, is also covering the idea of atato brahma jigyasa, because meditation is the end of inquiry, according to Vishwanath. And yes, the janmad yasya yataha describes how Krishna is the cause. Vishwanath, as we mentioned, gives five interpretations. So the first interpretation, in a nutshell, is how Krishna is the cause, the maintainer, the destroyer of the universe, and it's him in relation to the creation. That's the first interpretation. That's the interpretation that most stands out to any reader. But then he also describes how it can refer to Krishna and his birth, and how he later went to the house of Nanda Maharaj, and why he went there, and some adjectives are given. If we get time, we'll discuss some of those. And then it describes about the Adirasa. You may remember that Srila Prabhupada, in the commentary to in the purport to the first verse, talks about Vishnuf and the seeing the Adirasa in the first verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So Janma Adyasya, he takes the word Adyasya, the birth of the original rasa, like Purusham Adyam or Adi Purusham. So he sees that in the third interpretation that Krishna is there, and Krishna is the fountainhead of all rasa, Kila Rasamrita Murti. So the third interpretation, for example, deals with how the Bhagavatam talks about the Adi Rasa, the Madhurya Rasa. And the fourth interpretation talks about how for there to be rasa, you need two people. So necessarily, this first verse must also talk about Radha. So Radha and Krishna together as the fourth interpretation of the verse. And then the fifth interpretation, this scripture must teach us how to reach or how to come into contact with Radha and Krishna. So there must be an Abhideya, and that's Bhakti Yoga. And Bhakti Yoga is there as Vishwanath's fifth interpretation of the verse. How much time we get to discover those five interpretations, we can mention something, but the point of that is that in the first interpretation, for example, several Vedanta Sutras are mentioned. So the first one, Janmad Yasya Yataha, is the cause of the creation of the world and so on. And so on means the maintenance and the destruction of it too. Anvayaditaratascha, right? Both by his presence there and his absence there. Anvaya and itarata. The word itara means other, anya, right? So when you have anvaya and the other, you have a pair, so presence and absence. So just like there is clay in a pot, but there is not pot in a clay. So Krishna is the what's called the Upadana Karana, the ingredient cause of the creation. Through his energy, the material nature, he is the ingredients of the material creation. And through his aspect as the time factor, he is the instrumental cause, the Nimitta Karana of the creation. You have the material energy, and at a certain point, when it becomes agitated by the time factor, then it starts producing so many varieties, and creation proceeds from there. So that covers the Vedanta Sutra Tattu Samanvayat, right? That Vedanta Sutra means he is the cause because of his presence in it. So he's the Krishna is actually the ingredient cause of the universe. But there's a relationship, like, of samavaya, that just like the pot depends on the clay for its existence, but the clay doesn't depend on the pot. So the world depends on Krishna for its existence, but Krishna doesn't depend on the world. Or cloth, if you have some cloth, the cloth inheres in the individual threads. Without individual threads of fiber, you cannot have a piece of cloth. So the cloth depends on the threads, but the threads don't depend on the cloth. So that's anvaya, that the world depends on Krishna, but it's itara, it's vyatireka, that Krishna doesn't depend on the world. So another sutra is covered. When we say Tene Brahma Hridaya Adi Kavaye, he revealed the Brahma, the Vedic literature, the Vedas, unto the Adikavi, Lord Brahma. That indicates the Vedanta Sutra, Netaro Nupapatehe, which means not this other guy, because he's not fit. The Vedanta Sutras are very short, so literally, unless you know what they mean, the sutra just means not this other fellow because he's not fit. So what that means is somebody may think that Lord Brahma is the creator of the universe, right? We said, Janmad Yasya Yataha, he because of whom there's creation of the universe. So somebody may think, oh, you're talking about Lord Brahma. So then a few sutras later in the Vedanta Sutra says, no, it's not that other guy, not Lord Brahma, because he's not fit. He's not self-illumined in terms of knowledge. He has to be instructed. He has to be enlightened by another in the heart. So he's not capable of being the cause of everything because he's receiving outside help. So that Vedanta Sutra is also covered there. And lastly, Dhamna Swena Sadani Rasta Kuhakam. Krishna, by his power, the word Dhaman actually has four meanings. We as devotees, we usually say Sri Vrindavan Dham. And that's one of the meanings of the word Dhaman, which means abode. But it has several other common meanings. Can mean the form, the power, or even the bodily complexion. So Vishnu takes it to mean the power. So Krishna, by his own power, he constantly, pushes back or rejects the kuhakas. The kuhakas, kuhaka means a cheater. Cheater, or it can mean cheating or ignorance in general, right? Deception. Nirasta kuhakam. So kuhaka can mean the person who does it or the ignorance or the deception itself, right? So the cheater, it pushes back. Krishna, by his own power, pushes back cheaters. So, there's the there's that Upanishadic saying that, manasasaha, yato vacho nivartante manasasaha, something like that. From whom the words rebound back, along with the mental effort of meditation, right? The sages, by the power of their own ascending knowledge of jnana, ascending process of jnana, want to describe him with some words, or they want to meditate on him with their mind, but their efforts bounce back, they return unfruitful. So that's because this is what's described in this sutra of the Vedanta Sutra, Tarka Pratishtana. Logic is ineffective in understanding the absolute truth. You cannot logically put Krishna into a box, and you'll come usually to the wrong conclusion. There's that whole, Prabhupada often quotes the verse, Mahajana yena gata sapanta. But anybody know how that verse begins? Tako pratishta, yeah. Shrutayo vibhinna, right? It's the same thing mentioned in this Vedanta Sutra, that logic is inconclusive. And the Shrutis are saying different things. You'll get all kinds of ideas. The only way you can come to any conclusion is, you know, sadhu marganugamanam, which is also something that's talked about in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, following the path of the sadhus. That's the only way you can come to the real conclusion. So that shows how Gayatri, how several Vedanta sutras, for example, are there in the first verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam. The first verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam also describes how it's very wrong to have this conception that the form of the Lord is a material creation of the three modes of nature, which is basically what the Mayavadis say, right? That there's Brahman, and then when he comes and assumes a form, then it's just Maya, you know, and that's Krishna, right? And that's what they say. So they say, Tejo Vari Mridam Yata. Tejo vari mridam yata vinimayo yatra trisagam risha. Just like somebody may mistake water in light. Tejas means light, vari means water, and mrid, like mridanga, mrid means earth. Just like somebody may mistake water in light, like a mirage in the desert, the light, it reflects off the sand in a certain way that it looks like a shimmering water effect. And people, when they're very thirsty, chase after that. They think it's water in the desert. So they've seen vari in tejas. They've seen water where there's actually just light. They've seen a mirage. So in that way, seeing that Krishna has a body made of three modes is equally false, the Srimad Bhagavatam says. Or it gives a few other examples that if you see water in earth, for example, if you see a piece of glass, it's an earthy substance, a solid substance, but it appears to have some qualities of water. Clearness, right? For example, translucency. You may mistake it for water. Or you sometimes may even mistake water to be earth. You know, sometimes if there's a pond and it's covered by lots of moss, or to give you a more extreme example, Vishvakarma created the palace of the Pandavas, and he created it in such a way that there was water, you know, there was nice ponds in the courtyards, but it looked like solid ground. And so Duryodhana went walking to the palace, right, and he thought it was solid ground. He mistook the water to be solid ground, and he fell in, right? And Draupadi laughed, and it led to a whole series of things. But so in this way, there's the misconceptions about the absolute truth are thrown out in the very first verse. And other interpretations are mentioned too. We mentioned the second interpretation. We'll just give you a basic idea in a few minutes, something that usually takes a few classes. But it's described anvayat. We talked about anvayat, Krishna's presence in the material creation as the ingredient cause. Well, you can also take that to mean a separate verb in Sanskrit. You maybe have seen in Bhagavad Gita, tepi yanti param gatim, right? The verb ya, to go, yati, yanti. So the past verb tense is ayat, and anu means towards or after, right? So anvayat means he went. So after taking birth, the second interpretation can mean Krishna, after his janma, he went to another place, itarataha, than the place where he took birth. So he took birth in the palace of Kongsa, in the prison house. But after taking birth, he went to a place other than the place where he took birth, to the house of Nanda. Why did he do that? Arteshu abhigyaha, because he was aware, abhigyaha, he was aware of Arteshu, of the various purposes, Kamsa's purposes to kill him, and his own purposes to relish transcendental rasa with his devotees in Vrindavan. So he went for those reasons. And various other adjectives are given to Krishna in that second interpretation. And the third interpretation, for example, we said that it can refer to the Adi Rasa. Particularly when it refers to when it refers to Radha and Krishna, then the Adi Rasa comes about, you know, because of Radha and Krishna, the Adi Rasa comes about, and it's caused by Anvaya, which Anvaya means Sambandha, coming together, Samboga. And the opposite of Samboga is Vipralamba. So those are the two causes of the Adi Rasa, right? Samboga and Vipralamba, Anvaya and Vyatireka, and Itara, which means Vyatireka. Or in this case, Vipralamba. So, describes how Radharani is Swarat, for example. She keeps Krishna under her control, Swa, her own Krishna. Raj, she rules over him, and it describes that how she's therefore like a Swadina Bhatrika, Nayika, how she's a lover who keeps her lover under her control. And Krishna's Arteshwar Abhigya, he's very expert, Abhigya, very clever, Vidagda. In artas, in the various arts, the 64 arts, he's well known for his quality of being a Dhira Lalita Nayaka. So these two go together very well. Krishna is a Dhira Lalita lover. He's very playful, very clever, very carefree. And also one of the qualities of Dhira Lalita is that he's Prayasi Vashaha. He's under the control of his beloved. So his quality of being Dhira Lalita and Radharani's quality of being Swadina Bhadrika go together very well. And they're described by the words Arteshu Abhigyaha in terms of Krishna and the word Swarat in terms of Radharani. There's much more that could be said, but it's 9 o'clock, and we'll end here. If anybody has any questions or comments. Okay, so we'll finish here. Grantaraj, Sriman Bhagavatam, Ki Jai, Gaur Pritmanandi.